Okay, now we can start.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
If you build it, they will come. Joel, seen that movie?
He's in the movie, Joe.
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
In our 670 The Score studios, Jordan Malley.
Shout out to Jordan Malley.
Did Matt Peck get a signed copy of that book?
No, Matt Peck, he didn't. No.
No.
I'll talk to D. Rose.
Yeah, you got it. You're going to make it happen.
And Matt, you will be getting your book soon.
Kick back and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
And so all I was saying on this podcast, the Locked On Bulls podcast.
Locked On Bulls, 5 days a week.
Locked On Bulls starts now.
You can just see the vibe.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck and our special guest, Rick Camp from 670 The Score. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. You want to drop us a question, a text for next week's mailbag, you can do that at 331-979-1369. So we're ending the week of no basketball and chock full of podcasts with special guest Rick Camp, producer over at The Score, 670 The Score, producer for Bernstein and McKnight, and also the producer of The Lawrence Holmes Show. Rick, what's going on? And Matt, how are you guys?
I appreciate you guys having me. I've always been listening to the show. Appreciate what you guys are doing, especially now that we don't have basketball for the moment.
Yeah, Rick, I'm glad to finally welcome you onto the show, man, but I would not be so sure about the lack of basketball for Bulls fans right now. I think it's a good thing. I think a 65-game season was more than enough.
Yeah, I didn't think it was going to be that way, but you could not be more right. It's just been, I don't know, various levels of either depressing, frustrating, and just seemingly pointless at certain points in time. So, yeah, I'm not, from a Bulls perspective, not really against what's going on right now in terms of the basketball part of it.
You're right.
I think one of the things we want to start off with, Rick, is talk about the only Bulls news that we have. And it seems like Matt and I have scraped together over the last couple of weeks some pretty relative Bulls content. But as the weeks go on, it's going to get more and more difficult. I think the NBA draft is going to sort of save us. But Thomas Satoransky did an interview with Czech Media Company. And one of the things tweeted out was talking about him and Coach Boylan. So I want to get both of your guys' reaction on this real quick. He says, in regards to Coach Boylan, he tries, he cares so much, but it doesn't always help because he wants to control everything, wants to be perfect. It's great that he has positive thinking. In his opinion, the team will bring Jim back for the next season. That doesn't surprise me, but it does shock me that a player is actually saying that it's pretty likely that they're going to bring Jim back, even if they make supposed front office decisions. What do you guys think about this from Thomas Satoransky? And it's really the first kind of comment, real comment, that we've gotten from a player on Boylan in weeks.
Yeah, I mean, like, for me, the initial reaction was just laughter. Because it was so obviously a comment where a player was trying to be nice and not say anything hurtful or even say anything that could be misconstrued to be disrespectful of his head coach, a guy who is still technically his head coach. The season technically hasn't ended yet. Nobody's been fired yet, even though we're all hoping to God that Jim Boylan's given the boot at some point in between, you know, this season and next. I think Satoransky was doing his best and most politically correct way of saying, like, yeah, Jim's trying to help us, but he's not helping us.
Yeah, that's the thing, is it's like, I think we all agree Jim Boylan's not a poorly intentioned person. He thinks he's doing things that will help. They just aren't. So when you look at the comment, outside of the thinking the team will bring him back next year, I don't necessarily disagree with any of it. I just think he's bad at his job. That's all. He's not a bad person. Just really, really sucks as a head coach in the NBA.
What's funny to me is it feel like we're all in on the joke and so are the players at this point, and they get it. They just don't really want to say anything again. Like you guys said, he's a head coach. He's still making decisions on the rosters, who gets playing time, who doesn't. And you see, we've got two good examples over the last 2 years of players who didn't exactly agree with things with Jim Boylan, end up getting the exile in Jabari Parker and Denzel Valentine. So I'm not surprised by it either. The only thing that bugs me, and it goes along classic with Bulls stuff, is the micromanaging. What's worse, an owner or a coach that doesn't really care, or an owner and a coach or GM micromanaging the shit out of the day-to-day?
I mean, I think it depends on the quality of the coach, because that was an issue with Tibbs in the front office. That was an issue with Phil Jackson and Jerry Krause. The power struggle between coach and management is always there. It's just a question of whether or not the players buy into the coach's message. And they don't necessarily have to pit him against the front office like Phil did. You know, like Phil Jackson very effectively made it a us against them thing. And the them thing wasn't just the 29 other teams in the league and the media and whoever else, but it was their own front office. You know, and with Tibbs, it was something similar. And it was Tibbs being controlling to say, you know, stop micromanaging, get the hell out of my practices, let me run my team. And obviously John Paxson had a problem with that. Gar Forman had a problem with that. Gar Forman and, you know, all the stories about the snitches and the rats that he would, the moles that he would put, you know, on his staff so that he could report back. And what is Tibbs saying? What are the players saying? But at the, you know, at the core of the issue was Tom Thibodeau, yeah, had those issues. Phil Jackson, yeah, had those issues. But they were good coaches who got the best out of their players and won basketball games. The same problem exists with Jim Boylan, but the difference is the dude sucks and doesn't win basketball games.
Exactly. If either of the sides is good to really good, then you can do that. And a lot of times if you have the good ownership, it trickles down to having good management and a good coach. But yeah, in this instance, I mean, none of it's going to be great when you have a bad head coach and bad management. No matter where the power structure, you know, wherever, how much anybody cares, if everybody's bad at their job, it's not going to have good results, and you're going to get a season like you just saw with this one. But I mean, on the whole, if you're looking more just generically in a vacuum, ownership is the greatest advantage you can have in sports. Shouts to Danny LaRue. That's just his thing. He'll always put out on Twitter, and it ends up, and it's true vast majority of the time. So I guess if you're thinking about that, you'd rather have competent slash caring ownership if you have to choose between it. But I don't know, man. This is the Bulls. So
we want Jim to be our head coach next season.
It's the Bulls, so whatever. That's the slogan for next year.
And isn't that so true? Matt, I know you touched on this question, but I want to get Rick's answer to this, and maybe we can discuss it a little bit further. But a bunch of our texters are asking now, just because of coronavirus and the Bulls not playing any games and not finishing out the season, what it meant. We kind of talked about what it meant for the players and as far as their evaluations go. Matt and I have done two player evaluations already, and we're going to continue that next week. But we were kind of thinking, like, how does this affect some guys' value that aren't going to be a part of the Bulls anymore? But a bigger question was going, you know, all these rumors about the Bulls potentially making front office changes, management shifting. Will the scenario with coronavirus shutting down the NBA and potentially delaying next season, will that have an effect on whether or not the Bulls make changes this summer? What do you think, Rink?
It might change the scope to which they make changes in this first off season. So part of what we don't know, since we're not on the inside of the NBA, is are teams allowed to, like, are the Bulls allowed to talk to whichever executives they're thinking about interviewing in this time frame, or at least those organizations, to try and set up conversations, make sure they get approval, all that kind of stuff? Because if they're allowed to do that in this time frame, I think it could help maybe smooth that transition, because in theory, if they do this properly, they could be ahead of the game for when the end of a normal season would be, in terms of interviews, having an idea of who they want to bring in for certain positions. But if there's essentially a gentleman's agreement of, hey, let's not touch on any of this stuff during this period, then obviously, you know, the Bulls are going to be behind the eight ball a bit, and maybe they'll be able to bring in the top exec they want, maybe one or two people that would be under them. But in terms of what we've heard about, overhauling the entire scouting department, trying to bring this front office a little bit more into the 21st century, or at least closer to the 2020s. That might take a couple off seasons where you actually have more time to put things in place. But once again, if they're able to talk to people during this time frame, I think it ends up helping the Bulls out a decent amount, because they should be able to have those conversations, long form, short form, whatever, with whoever they want to speak with. Because what else is anybody doing right now? How many executives in the last week have you seen that have done podcasts around, you know, your national right. NBA outlets? I mean, everybody's doing it because they don't have a whole lot else to do at the moment.
Yeah, I pretty much am right on board with that. Like I touched on it yesterday. I'm hoping that the Bulls are using this time wisely, assuming that they are, you know, allowed to. Obviously, they're not getting people in the building, as they would say, for sit-down interviews yet, just because of the entire league being, you know, adhering to guidelines and recommendations of health professionals and social distancing and quarantine and all that jazz. But they should theoretically use this time to help that process of the front office overhaul and the front office change, as opposed to just kind of, you know, sitting around twiddling their thumbs and waiting for the next step. They should be, in many ways, they can use this time to lay out a, you know, the groundwork of how they want to go about the process, the search, you know, who is involved, how are they conducting the search, who are their top targets, how are they going to pitch these top targets individually based on what they think those top targets will be looking for and the experience that they have. Like, there's plenty of groundwork to do right now if you're the Bulls and you're getting ready for that front office overhaul.
We studied the options.
My thing about the Bulls making this decision and, you know, whatever's going to go on with the coronavirus over the summer and how it's going to delay the NBA season and maybe even delay next season, does this put the Bulls in a situation where they can maybe, if they decide to move on from Jim Boylan or, you know, decide to make replacements as a GM, does this ultimately favor the Bulls to be able to not run any type of official search, saying, well, we can't bring anybody into our building, we made phone calls, we did this and that, but behind closed doors, they already kind of knew who their guy was going to be? I mean, we've talked about this with head coaches. The Bulls haven't run a head coaching search in nearly a decade or over a decade. So does this make it easier for the Bulls to do that if they do decide to make changes in front office wise this summer?
I mean, they haven't given a crap about a real coach, a real search in forever anyway. So if they want to, you know, use this as cover for a BS search this time, fine, whatever. But I think we still all hold out a little bit of hope that they'll actually do a real big boy adult search, and that this could help, you know, facilitate that and make it a little bit easier. So even if they're going to try and bulls it up, they have a little bit of time to, you know, make their mistakes and still not be completely screwed, because it's not musical chairs necessarily in terms of candidates versus jobs, maybe more in the head coaching ranks. But I don't know if the Bulls want to do their thing. And if it is Chad Buchanan and the first name that, you know, we got leaked out by KC, then fine, that's what it's going to be. And it's probably unfair to put this on Chad Buchanan, but it'll just feel a lot more like normal Bulls operating procedure, as opposed to maybe they bring in a variety of guys from a variety of styles of organizations with different thought processes and try and assess what they think would work best for them moving forward.
The one thing I was going to say that on that, Rick, is at least with Chad Buchanan, the fact that he's actually somewhat competent. Look at all the trades that he had made. Look at all the moves that he's made, all the signings that he's made with Indiana. So if you're asking me, that's way more competent than what we have right now. So it's tough, though. It puts us as Bulls fans in a weird position if all of a sudden that's the guy that they knew all along. They don't run for a search. He ends up getting hired. I'll give him a legit shot, and I think most Bulls fans will, because it'll be a refreshing change for once. But still in the back of our minds, we're like, oh, great. You know, we knew this about Fred Hoiberg. We knew this about previous coaching searches and everything else that they've done. So kind of puts that, I think, in the back of Bulls fans' heads. But if it is Chad Buchanan, I would not be upset about that at all. I think that would be a fresh face, and he's got proven success. So for me, that would be good. Anything else on that? Anything else on off-season moves in general, players or front office, Jim Boylan moves, anything like that?
I thought Darnell's article this week on The Athletic about, you know, like kind of the who stays, who goes, trying to figure that out, is really interesting. And the problem is, it's all layered together of you have no idea who would stay and who would go based on who's going to be making those decisions. I mean, you see someone like Gerson Rosas that went from the Rockets up to Minnesota. And now this is an extreme example. In give or take a year and change, he's replaced 13 of the 15 guys on the Minnesota roster. I think Karl Anthony Towns and Josh Okogie are the only guys that are still there from the time he took the job.
That's wild.
And I wouldn't expect any sort of changeover to be that quick, because that's pretty extreme. But still, it could be someone else comes in, wants to bring in a different type of system. The Bulls would need different type of personnel because that guy would bring in a coach that would have similar thoughts to him. Or you have someone who more or less just wants to optimize what the Bulls have. It all depends on who gets brought in. And there's good names out there right now. Now, I don't know how available some of them are because, you know, a lot of those front office titles are a little fudged here and there based on what the actual responsibilities are in each organization. But there are some interesting names out there that the Bulls could bring in. And it's just a matter of what type of style they want. And that's where all this time could be really interesting, because maybe Chad Buchanan has a different way he'd want to run the Bulls organization and restructure everything than a guy like Justin Zanuck in Utah would, or Arturnis Karnisovas in Denver would, something like that. Those would be like your top end guys maybe that you could try and bring in that would, I would assume, just based on the organizations they're in, might have different ways of running things. And just whether it's Michael Reinsdorf or whoever all is on that selection committee deciding what type of structure they want for this team moving forward. So you have to hope that he's been doing his research on not only the candidates, but what type of organization they want to be moving forward.
Yeah. Camp, the example that you talk about with, you know, the extreme turnover, when you bring in somebody new in charge, as far as the roster is concerned, that is one example of this Bulls ownership group being open to such drastic measures, because you can look through the last 35 or 40 years of all these different eras, and they are consistently shown that they have consistently shown that they are willing to do that. Think all the way back to, you know, so like Reinsdorf buys the Bulls in 84, the Bulls draft the Michael Jordan in 84, and then they bring in, you know, this hotshot scout by the name of Jerry Krause, who basically says, yo, so you got this Michael Jordan guy and then 14 other players you don't want, and I'm going to get rid of all these guys and I'm going to build you a different team. And the Reinsdorf said, okay. Jerry Reinsdorf said, okay. Fast forward to the end of the dynasty, and then Jerry Krause tries to do the rebuild from 98 through 2003, and it's not going well. So John Paxson says, let me give this a shot. By the way, I'm gonna trade basically everything that Jerry built. I'm going to completely overhaul this roster. And then, you know, you got the baby Bulls out of that with the Lou Aldang and the Ben Gordon draft and the Noach and the Kirk Heinrich team that actually looked like it was going somewhere, certainly at least a competent team again. But again, that was Jerry Reinsdorf saying okay to drastic measures and a complete overhaul being taken when the front office changed. And then just as recently as the latest iteration of, are we going to see something like that again? Because they convinced them that trading Jimmy and starting over was the right thing to do. Now, is that the last rebuild that they let John Paxson do? If they bring in someone new and that someone new says, all right, I want to trade Zach LaVine, or I want to trade Lowry, or I want to trade Wendell, I want a complete overhaul. We have examples throughout history of this organization of the Reinsdorf saying okay to such drastic measures being taken.
Yeah, and to your point, even between three-peats, outside of Michael and Scotty, now it's easier to do this when you still have Michael and Scotty, but everybody else changed. Everybody right. else changed besides those two guys. So yeah, no, that's a very fair point.
So if I have to quickly ask, if they do bring somebody in that's going to bring in drastic measures, say they decide they're only going to keep three guys on this roster, who do you think are the three safest guys that they'll keep around?
Honestly, I wouldn't put any names there right now. I would not put a single name on that list of safe and untradeable on this Bulls roster as it sits right now.
Yeah, that's probably fair. I mean, maybe Kobe White. But outside of that, like if I was forced to choose three players, and I'm not going to go for like, you know, guys towards the end of the roster because that's no fun. But I would say for now, Wendell, Kobe White, And then that third spot's really interesting because I could very easily see someone new with fresh eyes come in and just say, you know what, Lauri Markkanen, I totally see what you guys thought when you drafted him, but I'm just not seeing it and I don't trust it. Or with Zach LaVine, it's just someone that's convinced he can't necessarily be the type of winning player they want. I mean, it's probably just those two. And then after that, it's whatever. It really is at that point. It's so much going to be in the eye of the beholder. But I could see saying, you know what? You have a guy who's can be a starter quality center, which is kind of whatever in the NBA at this point in time because there's such a high replacement level on centers. But I have a guy that's on a rookie deal for a couple more years, plays pretty good defense. He can protect the rim, working on the offensive game. And then Coby White, who just has a boatload of talent, and you can kind of help refine him and turn him into whatever you need for what you want to run. I could easily see those two guys being kept, at least in the short to medium term. And then after that, everything else on this roster is up for grabs.
It's a good point. I'm curious if they go more value-wise and like who's the most valuable in terms of a trade asset right now. Obviously, Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, Wendell Carter, and...
Well, I think it's clear with LaVine's contract, he is the most valuable trade piece they have right now. He's got two more years on that deal making less than $20 million, and he's a 25-5 player.
The only thing that would hurt that, and it's only going to hurt it marginally, is the fact that if the NBA cap does go down, like we were talking about earlier in this week, Matt, about it potentially going down $8 or $9 million, that could hurt it a little bit. But, I mean, maybe that would open up teams to be willing to trade their max guys and just trying to get off of money. So that could pressure some teams to maybe want to make deals that were kind of complacent before. But you're right. We've talked about that a ton of different times about Zach LaVine's contract. If I had to keep, I think I would only keep two guys. And I sounds like I'm the only guy that would keep this guy, Zach LaVine. I don't think you're going to, straight to your point, Matt, I don't think you get the value back in a trade for what Zach LaVine could deliver you for the next 2 years. And who knows if things do change and he actually likes the direction it's going, you have a potential all-star or borderline second, third tier type of player still on a decent value and would maybe re-sign. I don't think he was going to get the max in his next contract, but we'll see. But still, that's as close as you've had since Jimmy Butler's been here. And we all know how hard it is to get stars, especially here in this city. We can't sign anybody, so we have to draft them. And then I would keep Coby White too. Although I think you could probably get the best value for Coby White out of him, Markkanen, or Carter right now.
I would say Markkanen's value right now is at an all-time low.
Yeah, I think Carter could still get you something pretty good because teams are going to be intrigued, even though the center position's devalued, just with what you know he can bring defensively. And I'm sure there are teams that saw him from the draft, and this is where the Bulls are as an organization, and say if we just give him competent player development coaching and just competent coaching in general, we know his offense can flourish. He just wasn't allowed really to do that very much in Chicago. So the Bulls are, you know, I've talked to a couple of people that are either in or just kind of on the edges of the league saying teams view the Bulls for either potential coaches or as executives looking for a team to maybe get some talent from. The Bulls are a team that they look at as, hey, I could, it's a decent coaching job because they've just been mismanaging their talent so much, or hey, I can trade this guy for less than I should be able to because he's been mismanaged by their front office. So it's bad for the Bulls, but that's how some teams are looking at them right now.
I think it's a good point. You know, I was telling Matt this too, is it's not to that point yet, but it's getting pretty close to the point where all these managers and GMs looked at the Cubs back in the early 2000s, mid 2000s as the place to be able to capture that championship. And it was like all these big time guys were coming in here trying to make history. And, you know, the Bulls aren't that far away from the 3P. I mean, it's 20 years, 22 years at this point. But still, the farther we get out from that, maybe somebody out there with a higher tier wants to come and say, you know what, I'm going to be the guy to change around that team. And the fan base would love me for that. But I don't know if we're there yet. It feels like it's at the early stages, though. So hopefully, at least for Bulls fans, hopefully that's the case. All right, I think we spent enough time talking about the actual Bulls team. I sent you guys this yesterday or 2 days ago. I wanted to do something fun and something that I haven't seen yet. So from the Bulls community, so us three are going to draft our starting five Boylanisms. So these are words or phrases that Boylan has used that now are commonplace among Bulls Twitter, among Bulls Nation. So I wanted you guys to describe what you think when you hear a Boylanism, what you guys think of that. For me, a Jim Boylanism, it's a word or phrase describing a player, team, or coaching strategy or anything else basketball related that doesn't really necessarily fit the context or message of his original question. And it also tends to be a very cliche line that he tends to screw up. So any of that to me reminds me of a Jim Boylanism. Is that fair to say? Do you guys have similar definitions of what a Boylanism is?
Yeah, I mean, I would just say it's something that, depending on my mood, makes me laugh or makes me want to kill myself.
Yeah, flawed logic, like justifying flawed logic is part of that too. So yeah, there's either messing up phrases, wrong phrases, just completely bad logic on the court or off the court or whatever. Yeah, there's just so many things that qualify.
You're right.
He's just like a nice enough sounding guy to where it's like, oh, that's adorable that he thinks that. That's kind of where my default goes to.
He's not nut.
All right, with that, we're going to do a snake draft. So I want to snake draft this. And I have as much sound as I could pull from Boylan. So if there is something that we do end up drafting that I don't have, I will go back and place it in here for context. But yeah, some of these bigger ones that we have that we end up drafting, let's talk a little bit about context, because everybody listening to the show may not remember where this comes from or necessarily what Boylan was talking about. But then after this, I'm going to tweet it out at Locked On Bulls. We'll give you guys 12 or 24 hours to vote who has the best starting five Boylanisms. So to kick it off, Matt, I'm going to have you go first in this draft. What is the number one overall pick in terms of Boylanisms?
I feel so honored to get the first pick in this snake draft of Jim Boylanisms. I mean, hashtag Jim Boylan says stuff has been the much needed fun content for Bulls fans in the season and a half since he took over for Fred Hoiberg, because the product of basketball on the floor has not been worth watching for the most part. To me, the answer was clear cut what I would draft number one as far as the Jim Boylanisms. And it was when, soon after he took over for Fred last season, and he was getting a little bit of pushback, not only from his own players, but from the media on this, you know, shock and awe campaign he was running. And he said, "My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child." And a lot of people, you know, cracked up at that line. But to me, the best part is the part that some people leave off of that quote, which he follows up: "My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. Pause. "And these guys are men." So it's like he nailed this, you know, cliche little line to say, "Hey, my job is to be tough on these kids. Oh, but by the way, they're not kids. They're men. They're professional athletes. So everything you just said is a moot point."
"My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. And these guys are men. And these guys are men. And these guys are men."
Every time I hear it, it cracks me up.
That is a good one. So,
that's perfect. It really is.
All right.
With the second overall pick, I mean, it's right there. I'm not going to overthink this. How can you have Boylanisms without the Bulls across your chest?
Oh, that's a good one.
Therefore, you all the time. It doesn't, like, it's hard to give context to it because it's every day. It's,
you know,
in every
Bulls across
context.
Our chest.
It's a default answer.
You know, we got Bulls across our chest.
That was one of the first ones. That was one of the first drops I remember pulling and going, I don't exactly, is this straight out of an 80s movie? Like, what is he talking about? Is this from junior high?
As opposed to what? Spurs across the chest? Like, fucking duh.
Hey, it could have been Rockets. Did you know he coached under Rudy T?
Oh, man. I mean, just as much as I knew that he coached under Greg Popovich.
Oh, man. Bulls across our chest. That is a really, really good one. Those are good, two really good choices at the beginning. All right. Let's see. I think I have two picks here. So Oh, man. All right, I'm going to take this one. This one is more notable. Actually, I'm going to go with this one first. This was one of the most bizarre things that I remember, and this started within the first 2 weeks of Jim Boylan becoming head coach. You guys remember the Celtics come to town. They put up a historic number against the Bulls. The Bulls end up with their worst loss in franchise history at 56 points,
right.
And the player mutiny happens. And the one thing Jim Boylan decides to say about pulling his starters twice was that he didn't want to double lose. So I'm going to take the phrase double lose.
I like that one. I like that one.
I don't have the drop from that, and I wish I did, but I'm going to go back and see if I can find it.
I love that one because it's like so amazingly wrong, because it's like, dude, okay, well, if you're saying that a tired practice it counts the same as a loss in an NBA game, which it doesn't, like, if you're saying, well, I don't want to double lose, guess what? You just infinity lost because you now, next to your name, hold the worst loss in franchise history. Of all of the times the Bulls have lost, from 1966 until now, you were the coach for the worst one of those losses. So how many losses and how many double losses is that?
It's just a great memory.
I know that.
So, all right, for my second pick, and this is a tough one because I'm not going to have a pick for a while, so I've got to be good here. I think this is pretty iconic. Most people know this one. I'm going to have to go with the short version of when Boylan decided to reference not a basketball movie, but decided to reference a baseball movie in Field of Dreams, asking Joe Cowley if he'd seen that movie after dropping the "if you build it, they will come." I'm going to leave that, but I'm going to take
it, they will come.
You've seen that movie, Joe.
Seen that movie, Joe?
All right, Rick, I think you're up now.
That one is so perfect because, and choosing that part of it, because he's looking for the reassurance. Like, he thought he's kind of being funny while acknowledging the situation, but really not.
Seen that movie?
I love that. You know, I'm a bigger guy, and I need my meals. So I really think I have to put my food that I'm having, especially while we're all stuck at home, on my growth plate. Because Jim Boylan doesn't understand what a growth plate is, the purpose of the growth plate, and when he says that's the growth plate about things the Bulls are messing up, they're not getting better, so there's no growth, so the growth plate is irrelevant.
That's the growth plate.
That is such a good one. Yeah.
I needed to get a plate, and I got the growth plate, so I'm very happy. I think that's value in round two.
That's the growth plate.
Oh, that's great value. Great value in round two. And I mean, pretty sure all season long, anytime Bulls fans had to hear that, our collective response was, "The fuck is a growth plate?" And also, where are they? Because we don't see any. This team is getting worse.
I'd love to have that on the Bulls registry.
Oh yeah, absolutely. when Jerry Reinsdorf marries that Forbes article telling us all how much the Bulls are worth. I'm up in my end of round two pick. It actually goes to Jordan's first pick at the end of round one, talking about how Jim Boylan didn't want to double lose in that franchise worst loss to the Celtics. Fast forward to early November of this season, and the Bulls coughing up a late big lead to LeBron, AD, and the Lakers, which was like the most furious I was all season long, because you could have had a quality win over two of the biggest stars in the league and a huge team and a potential championship favorite in the Lakers that really could have been an early season defining win. Instead, Jim Boylan, you know, leaves his starters out and watches his crappy bench cough up a lead in a fourth quarter where he is just sitting there and not taking any timeouts. So after the game, of course, Boylan's asked so many questions about, so why exactly did you do the things you did and did not do the things you should have done as you were coughing up that lead? And he was talking about, you know, I've got 15 guys to develop, when talking about leaving his bench guys in there. And then a few moments later, this is my favorite quote. "I've never yanked guys. I've never done that, referencing the fact that he left in his bench players and has 15 guys to develop. Well, gee, what did you do in that franchise worst loss to the Celtics when you first took over for Fred to prove a point? You yanked guys. What did you do when you weren't getting along with Jabari Parker? You yanked the guy. It's just a bald-faced lie from Jim Boylan, and it cracks me up every time.
Damn, that's a good pick. I have the sound somewhere, and I actually mixed it down with the... I remember there's a famous YouTube video of a little kid who steals his grandmother's car. He's like 11 years old, and he just says, I want to do hood rat shit with my friends. And he also says, I just yanked the thing. I'm going to tweet out the video. I have the video of the mix, but it's hilarious. That is a great pick. All right, Rick. Or Matt, you have a second pick.
Yeah. Matt stole my pick, so it's good he has another one, so I have time to pick another one.
Oh, wait. Okay, so now I'm the snake, right? So I go again?
Yes.
Okay. I'm following it up with another quote from that very same post-game press conference after they blew that loss to the Lakers, and he was asked about why he didn't call a timeout as that lead was disappearing. Jim Boylan, quote, I had four, referencing timeouts, I think. I could have used one, and I didn't. It was on my heart. It was on my mind, end quote. What? I remember hearing that. I was listening to that in the green room at NBC with my guys, Big Dave and John, before our Outsiders show. And it was like, he said he could have used a timeout, but he didn't. But the concept of taking a timeout was on his heart and on his mind. What the hell does that mean?
That's
I have that
good.
Too. I can't. I remember exactly the con- and he uses it all the time too. Now it's like one of those references that he always uses. He's like, well, you know, they honor the essence of the team. It was on their hearts and their minds, and you know, it's like a staple of his phrases now. So that's a very, very good one. All right, Rick, I think you're up.
All right, this one is one of my personal favorites because I get to use it on the Bernstein McKnight show all the time. When Jim Boylan was on his run, this is before he was taking all the late game timeouts. This is when he was running out of timeouts all the time. So when asked about running out of timeouts and, you know, how that affects the team, he said, well, we prepare for that. So they prepare for him running out of timeouts and mismanaging his timeouts. So essentially, he preps the team for when he's a bad in-game head coach. But it doesn't end up working anyway. Running out of timeouts with 4 minutes left in a game. Cool. But it's okay because we prepare for that. How does this make any sense?
That's a great one. Yeah, he likes to attach, we're going to prepare things, or, you know, it's a learning moment. He loves to attach those little liners to stuff. And I think that's, to me, I feel like it's just fillers and he's just trying to, you know, not say anything bad about his players or anything. It's just kind of a, oh yeah, well, I gotta fill time here, so instead of saying I'm just gonna say that over and over. That's a great pick. All right, I've got two here. So this one, I don't know the context of this, and I don't remember when he said this or where he said this, so maybe you guys can fill me in on this one. But he gets this, I have no idea what he's even talking about, but he says, you need to get back on that bird and keep playing. Get back on that bird and keep playing. I mean,
get on that bird and keep playing. Get on that bird and keep playing.
Do you guys remember him saying that?
I think
that?
He's referring to an airplane, like they're on a road trip and they lost a game, but they got another game to play in another town the next night, so you got to get on that bird. That airplane and keep going. Gotta get on that bird.
Get on that bird and keep playing. I heard this drop a lot, but I had no idea what the context was. But it's one of my favorites.
Get on that bird and keep playing.
All right, so I'm gonna take that, and I'm also going to. I'm trying to think. This is a classic. I'm gonna take the simple.
You're right. You're right. You're right.
I use this drop all the time, whether it's here on Locked On Bulls or where it's at the score. It's probably, I would say probably top five most used drops of all time, just because he says it so often. You're right.
You're right.
So, all right, that rounds up my two picks. Rick, you are up.
I was worried a couple rounds ago, Matt, when you ended up going with I Never Yank Guys, and I kind of exhaled a little bit because it still left me with I've got 15 guys to develop. Because not only is it asinine to think that you have 15 guys to develop, but what development has happened on any of your players that matter? I think maybe the one player that you could say got better this year is Ryan Arcidiacono. And what does Ryan Arcidiacono really mean? Like, you know what? On a solid team, the Bulls have a really good third point guard. Let's go. Okay, great. Cool. What has Cristiano Felicio gotten better at since he put pen to paper? Anything?
Sitting on the bench.
Not particularly. Yeah. I mean, letting passes go between his hands, standing in the middle.
According to Jim Boylan, he's the best screener on the league, Rick.
Felicio,
I'm not sure.
That was Robin Lopez. Robin Lopez can actually do that. And Felicio, I mean, he is what I worry about being in social situations, which obviously we're not going to have any of those for a while. But I always worry when I'm in a decent family parties or whatever, and you're in an enclosed space. I worry about basically being a median where everybody's just going around you and you feel like you're just getting in people's way and you don't want to be that way. That's Cristiano Felicio on the court.
That is so true. And no matter what happens, no matter how long he's on the floor, every single time he's called for a foul or he turns the ball over, you can immediately see he turns to the ref with his arms out to the sides with like the most disgusted look on his face, as if he should have drawn a foul or he didn't foul anybody at all. For a guy that doesn't play hardly at all, he complains probably the most I've ever seen in my entire life.
Like complaints per minute? That's good.
He's probably leading the league in that. All right, Matt, you have your final two.
All right. So for my final two, I'm actually going to do two different quotes that are kind of paired together, much like the I've never yanked guys, and it was on my mind and on my heart following the Lakers loss. This one was, I believe, from a practice media availability when he was being questioned, Jim Boylan, about the lack of one Denzel Valentine in the Bulls rotation, despite theoretically Denzel Valentine being perfectly healthy and available to play. And so the question posed to Jim Boylan was, so why no Denzel Valentine? And Jim Boylan's answer was, quote, because I said so. Is there a more ludicrous power trip from a failing coach than that? I can't think of anything. It is so offensive to the intelligence of the media and the fans watching these games to say, well, this player isn't playing in my rotation because I said so, when guess what? Your rotation and your game plans are working dick all for your team that's 10 games under 500 despite an easy schedule to start the season. So I'm sorry, but because I said so ain't going to cut the mustard. And then following up, questions about Denzel Valentine. Did he do something? Is he not doing something? And, you know, what does he need to do to get in the rotation? And here is my second pick and my final pick of this draft. Jim Boylan said, I think he, Denzel, needs some seasoning. He needs to play and he needs to grow. So he's not playing because you said so. What does he need to do to play? He needs some seasoning. He needs to play. Try and make sense out of that word salad.
No, he just plays. Denzel just kind of plays, man. He just has a feel for it.
That's special. Has there ever been a more public way that a coach has said, could you please send this guy to the G League?
Or not the G League, like send this guy to Sacramento, anywhere but here, apparently.
That's great.
Despite the fact that Jim Boylan was obsessed with the team shooting a bunch of threes this season, and nobody out there on the floor that he put out there could hit a three, and one of the best three-point shooters on the roster, Denzel Valentine, is sitting there healthy and available and in his doghouse. None of it made any sense.
This feels like the Arrested Development scene where Job, Lindsay, and Michael are just ragging on Lucille, and then Buster just pops in and is like, yeah, Mom's the best. That's what this feels like right now.
No. Jim Boylan is Tobias dressed up as that like shitty version of Mrs. Doubtfire, like trying to inspire the family.
Yes. Ah, oh, Mrs. Featherbottom, the best.
Yes, exactly. I couldn't think of the name. Thank you. That is who Jim Boylan is.
Have you watched season four or five?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, because not many people, like, I know people gave four a spin and maybe even like re-rack of it, but not see, I don't know anybody who's seen season five. And I'm like, season five actually starts and ends really well, but the middle is kind of eh.
I think it's just because they changed the format so dramatically from the first three seasons that it kind of turned people off.
I very rarely find people that can go full tilt Arrested Development with me, so I had to take advantage of the opportunity.
Oh,
of course. It's one of my favorite shows ever. How many times did Bulls fans use the GIF this season watching a Bulls game of George Michael walking into the house, putting his backpack on the floor, and just falling down face first? That is the definition of this Bulls rebuild.
It really is.
You're right.
For my last, oh man, there's some good options left on the board.
There are.
Oh man, I think I'm gonna go with which one offends my sensibilities more. You know what? A lot of us, when we start conversations, say hi. Jim Boylan says we battled. If it's a post,
oh my god,
Jim Boylan starts every single one of them with, "Well, we battled out there." It's hard to nail down in a specific instance because it's every single game. I mean, it's pretty much choosing between that or got to give credit to the other team. But this one's more specific to Jim. So I'll go with, well, you know, we battled.
I was hoping we were going to get through this entire Jim Boylan Says Stuff draft without hearing those two fucking words. I mean, every time I hear those two words, my skin boils off of my bones.
Damn. All right. So I have the last pick, and this is tough to leave off because there's still so many good ones. But starting five, damn. There's three I'm thinking about right now that I can go with and that can round it out. One of them is more of a situation, is like a longer almost response to a play. Should I go with that one because it's underrated? All right, we're going to go with that one. I don't have it pulled in front of me. Let me see if I can pull it up real quick.
Well, look at your roster and see what could fit best with your roster, because that's something that the Bulls don't do either. So if you can, between what you're picking there, starter, that would be a nice direction.
That would be a great honorable mention quote when Jim Boylan said, "I'm not going to reinvent the wheel," that one night when, you know, people were asking him to maybe change up his game plan because some players got hurt and, you know, Felicio can't play the same defense that Wendell Carter Jr. can.
All right, I've got it. I'm going to go with this one. This is very underrated. So you guys remember a certain player the Bulls signed this offseason that we didn't see a whole lot of, but when we didn't, had one particular good game where he scored a lot, went off, I think, in the third and the fourth quarter, really kind of a meaningless game, but for the most part hasn't contributed the way that I think a lot of Bulls fans thought. After this successful game, Jim Boylan referred to Luke Kornet, saying that he reminded him of Robert Horry.
Jim Boylan said that he reminds him of Robert Horry.
I had to do it.
The best part was Stacy's in-game reaction when he heard that sideline report from Layla. What?
That's really good.
For context,
I had kind of forgotten about that one.
That's an under, like, there's so many with Boylan, and he hadn't completed two full seasons. This is like one and a quarter for Boylan. Right.
Fill out a 15-person roster doing this and then not develop them, but say we're supposed to.
It's so true. So here for context, I have the longer cut with Stacy in it. So here is them talking about Jim Boylan reacting to him calling him, reminding him of Robert Horry.
We talked about that half that Luke Kornet had as we're now in the first quarter, and believe it or not, Jim Boylan said that he reminds him of Robert Horry. That was something that Boylan brought up yesterday at practice, Neil and Stacy. Of course, Boylan spent time as an assistant with the Rockets. And he said Ori was one of the first guys who could rim protect at a high level and make threes. We all know Robert Ori could shoot a three. Luke Kornet with one made three tonight, but that's the idea. He said Luke Kornet has rim protection, block shots, and he liked how he guarded Giannis Antetokounmpo in the first half against the Bucks, gentlemen.
Neil Funk, Stacey King.
Oh, my goodness. Robert Ori?
Yeah,
Robert Ori was a great two-way player. Won rings, too. Oh, my goodness.
That's the best. We get the classic, oh, my goodness, from Stacey. So that rounds out my five.
Oh my god. That may have been the best moment of the entire season.
It's so underrated. We totally forgot a bit. All midst of all these injuries and this bad basketball and now coronavirus, we forgot about that classic moment. And that happened this season. It feels like forever ago.
Think about how bad Boylan has to be to have all of these crack the broadcast for the team. It's the team broadcast that you can't even get past it, where everybody's like, oh, how am I supposed to not comment on this? That's essentially what the 2019-20 Chicago Bulls. How am I supposed to not comment on this?
Do you really want me to comment on that?
All right. Let's summarize each of our five for our listeners that may not be on Twitter, but still maybe want to cast their vote. You can send a text to us at 331-979-1369. But I'm going to put a graphic up so people can see all of our choices and then vote who has the best starting five. So my starting five is Double Lose. Seen that movie, Joe? Get on that bird and keep playing. You're right. And Luke Kornet reminds me of Robert Ori. Rick, what are your five?
I've got Bulls Across the Chest, the growth plate. We prepare for that. Running out of timeouts. Got 15 guys to develop, and we battled.
Those are great.
I've got Child for the Road / These Guys Are Men. I've got I've Never Yanked Guys. I've got similarly, it was on my mind and on my heart after the Lakers lost calling a timeout and not calling a timeout. I've got Denzel Valentine's Because I Said So, and he needs some seasoning. He needs to play.
I need to go find that. He needs some seasoning. I need that drop so badly. So that rounds out the top 50.
What is it? What is he, a steak? Like, come on, Jim. What the fuck are you talking about?
And what type of seasoning are we talking about? Are we talking like Montreal steak, or are we just going straight salt and pepper? Like what are we doing here?
Yeah, you're going Lowry's steak?
Is Jim Boylan just like us? Is he just a salt guy? He leaves out the pepper. He doesn't put in anything else. He never really mixes it up. Is that what we're dealing with here?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Maybe.
If I had to guess, I would say he's a Patrick Mahomes weirdo who like dips his steak in ketchup.
Oh.
That's fair.
It might be something he picked up in Utah or something. It seems like a very Utah thing is eat your steak with ketchup.
Well, that would be sacrilege to do in Texas, because if you didn't know, he coached under Greg Popovich, which is in San Antonio, Texas, and Rudy Tomjanovich, which is in Houston, Texas. So I don't know what he's is doing that.
That's so good.
Never underestimate the heart of an idiot.
Real quick, can you guys think of any of the ones that we left off and that we want to rattle off real quick? Two of them that I can think of, and I think I've already played them. One was when he decided to bench Wendell Carter Jr. last year, and Cody Westerlund decided to ask him that fantastic question about what he decided to learn on the bench, and he just said introspection.
Maybe you have some introspection.
And the other one was when, I think Wendell said this first, but maybe Jim did, but he just was asked a question about Carter and how he's dealing through, going through injuries and still playing on it, and same thing with Markkanen, and he drops this.
He's not.
So those are two great ones that we did leave off. You guys have any honorable mentions?
I mean, he's nutting up.
Yeah, nutting up's a good one.
He's nutting up.
We also, none of us chose any of his quotes related to referring to his basketball players as football players. You know, whether it be Shaq Harrison or otherwise, he is obsessed with the idea that his players, while he is being tasked to coach basketball, he really loves his guys who remind him of football players.
I mean, Shaq Harrison on offense is like a football player, because he's like a Jerome Bettis, like a running back between the tackles. Instead of avoiding the players, he likes to go right at them with the ball.
Yes.
And he never threw the ball up, so it actually ends up working out.
What about that that Bulls loss to the Bucks when he had Archie guard Giannis for like the entire fourth quarter? And he was talking about how, yeah, sometimes, you know, Giannis struggles with some of the smaller guys that get up underneath him and, you know, kind of get up into his space. Really? Really, Jim?
That's classic. I, if I'm not mistaken,
I forget what game it was towards the end of the, or was it January? I think it was late January when the Bulls had a bad, and Jim mentioned that first quarters, that's the success plate.
Oh, yes. Yes. Thank you for mentioning that.
And success plate.
And his response to that is just so bizarre, too.
Success plate.
That might be one of the all-time drops, like, too.
That's the word. Everything's a something plate.
Everything's a something plate.
Everything.
Is a success plate for me.
Real quick, any others? I can't think of too many others. I think we've pretty much hit on. Oh, I Coach by Faith is another one. That's a pretty good one.
I Coach by Faith.
And he honors the essence of the team.
I feel bad not going Coach by Faith at some point.
That's a very good one. He's a baller. He balls is also a great one too. We left that one off. And also when he says I'm not, there's a great mix of I'm not, where Jim Boylan just says I'm not, or he's saying
I'm not. You know.
That's where you just, you know, do a quick cut up and be like, say, Jim, are you a competent NBA coach? And then just play that clip right there.
I'm not.
Oh, man. Poor Jim. I say poor Jim Boylan. That's the thing. I'm going to miss him when he's gone from Chicago, is I'm going to miss all these drops. I mean, Matt and I were talking about this. He's Hall of Fame on coaches that lead to great drops. Him and John Fox and probably, what, two others? Ozzie had some pretty good drops.
He's better than John Fox. John Fox was just intentionally not telling you things. He's on the like Gary Bevington, Mark Trussman level.
True.
That's I don't know if anything has quite matched the Terry Bevington. Well, I thought it was like the fair foul thing that he got himself confused on. I don't know if Boylan's quite hit that, but like the Mark Trussman, I didn't hear any of that quote. That's on level with a lot of his Boylan stuff.
We had a good week of practice.
Can you imagine if we had more sound of guys back in the early 2000s of like Skiles at his point of just ready to blow everything up, and same thing with Vinny. You know, we had it around, but not like social media where you can just grab clips from everywhere and anything anybody's ever said. Anything that's on paper is usually available with audio, like 90% of it is now. I can only imagine the kind of sound that we would have had in today's era, but Jim Boylan is definitely a classic. Whether he sticks around for another season or the Bulls decide to make changes, he will go down in the Hall of Fame of greatest drops created by a coach here in Chicago history. But I think that's going to about do it. This is a very, very long podcast. You guys got an hour. Matt and I haven't done an hour podcast together probably in, I would say, almost a year. I think we did an hour or so one last year right after some signings. But outside of that, we are giving you guys an extended episode. Rick Camp, thank you so much for joining us today. Follow Rick Camp on Twitter at RickCamp670. Go subscribe to the I'm Fat podcast. Him and Jay Zawoski, host of Locked On Blackhawks, do a great job. You guys still are running your March Fatness bracket. How far in are you guys on that?
So today, the Fatleets and Bobby Jenks regions wrap up the second round. So starting Monday, we'll be into the Sweaty 16. I'm excited with where we're at in terms of that at this point. Some upsets so far. We did have a 16-1. We had air conditioning take out sweatpants. So that's a little surprising to me. But, I mean, it's air conditioning. And maybe it's just because I've been so used to winter at this point and wearing long pants. Air conditioning is so key. I think it was misseeded as a 16. But it's a lot of fun and just special this year that we actually got Bobby Jenks to submit a region of his own.
That is
so
awesome.
Having someone the stature, literally and figuratively, of Bobby Jenks be willing to do that. He's the number one seed in the Fatleets region, and he created his own region. That's legend status.
That is awesome. That is awesome. So go subscribe to the I'm Fat podcast. Emma J. Zawoski. Anywhere you get podcasts, it will be there. But thank you again to Rick Camp for coming on. We will have these Boylanisms out, so make sure you go to @LockedOnBulls on Twitter to cast your vote. We'll have that up for probably, so I don't know, I haven't decided yet, either 12 or 24 hours, and then we'll post who has the best. But if you don't want to rewind, I'll post a picture too with all of our Boylanisms on there and maybe some of our honorable mentions. But thank you again to Rip Camp. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful weekend. We'll be back on Monday with a fresh episode. For Jordan, Matt, and Rick, we are out. Deuces.
That's the growth plate.
I'm not. My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. And these guys are men.
If you build it, they will come. Seen that movie? He's in the movie, Joe.
Success. Plate is a success. Plate for me.
I coach by faith.
He honors the essence of the team.
You know, we got balls across our chest.
You're right.
He's a baller. He balls.
He's nutting up. I don't make that kind of money to give it away.
I got a G League guy in there.
There's a lot of banging going on.
Get on that bird and keep playing.
So,
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com